From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on This Day in Maine, Wednesday, September 5th, 2018. And on this day, opposition to a plan that would put power lines in Maine to move energy from Canada to Massachusetts. And Maine continues to have a high rate of food insecurity. That's ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by Norway Savings, supporting the colorful vision of Maine's business owners. Live your life in color. NorwaySavings.bank.
After a year of record low unemployment figures, the percentage of Maine households facing food insecurity is still above the national average. Jennifer Mitchell has more.
According to new figures released by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, 14.4% of Maine households between 2015 and 2017 were classified as food insecure, while 6.4% of those households qualified as very food insecure, meaning that people in those homes reported running out of food, skipping meals, and going hungry.
What these numbers tell us is that the unemployment rate, especially in a place like Maine, really masks a lot of the issues that are going on.
Clara McConnell, Director of Public Affairs with Good Shepherd Food Bank, says the latest numbers show a 1.4% decline in food insecurity from the previous two-year survey period from 2013 to 2015. But Mainers, she says, are still struggling. One factor, she says, is their reliance on seasonal, part-time, and lower-wage jobs. In fact, she says many of the clients who access the food bank are employed.
One in seven Maine households is struggling to access enough food, and that is far higher than the national average still. And at this point, we're 10 years out from the Great Recession, and the food insecurity rate in Maine is finally starting to fall, but we still haven't reached pre-recession levels.
Maine ranked as the least food secure state in all of New England, followed by Rhode Island at 12.4% and Connecticut at 12.2%. New Hampshire had the lowest rate of food insecurity at 9.4%. The national average was 12.3%, with 4.8% of families experiencing very low food security. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Jennifer Mitchell.
Top company officials from two of the largest social media platforms in the world were grilled today by members of the Senate Intelligence Committee, including Maine's Susan Collins and Angus King. The hearing was called in part to find out what Facebook and Twitter are doing about the spread of misinformation on their platforms. Mal Leary has more.
Republican Senator Susan Collins, who has been targeted on Twitter by accounts traced to Russia, says she was never alerted by Twitter, but instead found out from researchers at Clemson University. She asked Jack Dorsey, co-founder and CEO of Twitter, about the company's notification policy.
It seems to me that once you determine that, you should notify the people who are the targets.
I agree. It's unacceptable.
Collins told Dorsey and Facebook's chief operating officer, Sheryl Sandberg, that they need to do more to communicate to users of their platforms who receive communications from fake accounts set up to influence public policy. Independent Senator Angus King says he has learned from visitors from Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania that Russia has not had much success in influencing political outcomes in those republics because most citizens are aware of the Russian efforts and pay little attention to them. King strongly suggested to Facebook Chief Operating Officer Sheryl Sandberg that social media platforms take steps to make users more aware.
And I would like from each of you some thoughts and hopefully a commitment to educating your users about the potential for abuse of the very medium that they're putting their trust in. Ms. Sandberg.
We really agree with you, and we've done this broadly, and we're going to continue to do.
King says he also wants to make sure that in the process of responding to these outside forces, these social media platforms do not become censors. He worries that legitimate ideas could be swept up with false information. Another major platform, Google, did not send a representative to Wednesday's hearing. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
Maine's waiver for compliance with the Real ID Act runs out next month, and the state is not ready, so it's applied for another two-year extension until October of 2020. The legislature has long been resistant to the law on privacy grounds, and in 2007, it passed a law prohibiting the state from participating. But 10 years later, it passed another law saying Maine would comply with the federal law. Maine Secretary of State Matt Dunlap says it will be expensive, about $2 million, but
we anticipate having the ability to issue real IDs by July 1st of 2019.
The request for an extension from the Department of Homeland Security is pending, but Dunlap says he can't see a reason why it wouldn't be granted. Maine has started its budget year significantly above revenue projections, in fact, by $20.8 million. State Finance Commissioner Alec Porteous says the state's economy is booming, and that's reflected in the growth of personal income tax revenues.
Basically, you're seeing in the individual line 18.7% year-over-year growth in July. So, really big number.
Sales and corporate income taxes, he says, are also above projections. Porteous says it appears Maine's economy is booming, with more people working and a summer tourism season that appears to be going well. Central Maine Power says it's ready to negotiate terms of its bid to build and upgrade 145 miles of high-power transmission lines to bring electricity from Canada's Hydro-Quebec dam system to Massachusetts customers. The move comes as regulatory hearings in Maine and Massachusetts are ramping up and, as Fred Bever reports, amid signs that opposition is growing more organized.
Late last week, CMP told the Maine Public Utilities Commission it wants to open settlement talks for its plan to build what it calls the New England Clean Energy Connection. John Carroll, a project spokesman for CMP's parent company, Avangrid, says it is responding to concerns about whether the project's ownership structure should be changed to better protect customers in Maine should the project suffer a financial setback.
And so this would be a chance to have those discussions. I don't know if it's Avangrid or CMP or some third special purpose entity, so I guess that's the question that has to be resolved.
Carroll acknowledges that by opening such discussions, more questions could be put on the table. Renewable energy developers, for instance, say CMP should build a line that would be more affordable for wind or solar projects to tap into. And the state's public advocate, Barry Hobbins, has called on CMP to provide Maine consumers benefits at least as valuable as the $50 million it would provide to low-income consumers in Massachusetts.
Presumably, people would bring that up, yeah.
The commission will start full-fledged hearings later this month, as will the Department of Environmental Protection. Pre-hearing meetings are underway now, and opponents are gearing up for a fight.
To feel as though this project was getting fast-tracked with not a lot of PR, I thought was a problem.
Sandra Howard is a guide for one of the many rafting companies that send thrill-seeking tourists down the rapids of the Kennebec Gorge, where CMP wants the new transmission line to cross. She started a Facebook page, Say No to the Corridor, and is organizing a press conference and rally in Augusta this week.
The first impact I saw was the gorge, but then I learned quickly that it's much more than that, especially with the 53.5 miles of brand new corridor going through Beattie Township to the West Forks.
Opponents now working together include Howard and environmental groups that say the project will unduly harm ecosystems in western Maine. Those include the Natural Resources Council of Maine and Trout Unlimited. There are generation companies, both renewable and fossil fuel, worried that they will lose money if Hydro-Quebec sends a massive amount of electricity into the regional system. Also entering the fray, a group of CMP customers that's filed suit over claims of billing overcharges. There are some less obvious opponents, too. A group of boosters for Route 201, recognized by the Federal Highway Administration as the Old Canada Road Scenic Byway, for instance. And there's Caleb Jacob.
I am not happy about it, and I will absolutely vehemently fight this thing until the very end. I'm doing this for my kids.
Jacob is president of the Upper Enchanted Road Association and one of dozens of camp owners in the townships of western Maine who would find their views and local natural resources bisected by the transmission line and its 100-foot towers. He's traveled to regulatory meetings on the project in Massachusetts and Maine, and he's posted a YouTube video of the area that's making the rounds among project opponents. Jacob says while CMP did pretty good legwork to round up support from local officials, he's still hopeful about the state-level permitting processes.
There are a lot of hurdles that they have to get through, and they aren't that easy. And it is not a done deal. And so at this point, I feel more encouraged now than I did a month ago that this could be stopped.
One other group that's emerged to oppose the project is keeping a lower profile. It's called Stop the Corridor. The group has sent mass mailings to state residents calling on them to oppose the project. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Wednesday, September 5th, 2018. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty.